other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a new podcast on the internet sponsored by Granny Crannies. Insert slogan here. My name's Aaron, you're their personal pals, Brick.
Hello.
Dave.
Hey, babies.
And Old Irish Nico.
Hello.
Continuing our end of year wrap up episodes, this is the episode where we talk about our favorite reading experiences of 2020. Last episode, or in this feed you heard probably before, our favorite books, our favorite reads of 2020. This is more about reading experiences, not just the content, but the actual sort of atmosphere or the time spent reading the text or whatever it is. This is one that I think is really open to different kinds of media as well, right? We talked about how in the reading episode, you can talk about, you know, not just books, but also, I don't know, tweets or pamphlets, if you're reading a lot of pamphlets these days. This reading experiences episode is also about like things you read that it might not be a long read, but something that impacted you or sort of changed your reading experience in some critical or crucial way. As you mentioned in the previous episode, this is a weird year. And so I imagine we had lots of weird reading experiences to share too. Some of mine are not altogether good, but were notable, I think. I have a couple of good ones in there as well. So I'll start this time with Nico. Nico, tell us about your best reading experience of 2020. And if you do not want to go first, you can pass. I saw your face.
I'm all right. I was just surprised. Yeah, so I think this could be recency bias, but I'm going to go with this book, Such a Fun Age, which was we just read for book club, and it was long listed. The what?
Ooh. Who's the author?
Kylie. Oh, Kylie Reed. Okay. Jesus, Dave.
Did you just say, is that a porn star?
Kylie Reed.
We should redo the sponsor for this episode. All right, so it was long listed for the Booker Prize, which is as far as that needs to go. It doesn't need to get on the short list, but it was a wild ride. So we read it for the book club. So I'm talking to my wife while I was reading it, and it starts off, and you think it's going to be the flap copy says it's about a black babysitter who takes the white kid that she's babysitting to a grocery store, and a security guard thinks that she's kidnapped the baby, and I was kind of like, it doesn't. Is that the whole book? Luckily, it's not. And it's like happens and then it's over. And I was like, thank God. And then the real kind of drama happens when the white woman who employs the black babysitter wants to become friends with her. And then the babysitter starts dating this guy who they realize was her white employer's high school boyfriend who fucked her over. And like on the night that they had sex for the first time, he invited these people, these like other people that went to high school with them, to come to her house and like swim in the pool, and she had to call the cops, and basically he betrayed her and ruined the rest of her high school experience. So, you know, so that's going along, and that's a much better drama, I think. But then there's a video of the incident at the grocery store, and the babysitter doesn't want it to get out, and the white lady breaks into her phone and sends it to a news station and like betrays her. And so then I was kind of like, okay, it's kind of a nice parallel, and it's kind of an everybody's the asshole situation. Like everybody's just an asshole to each other, but this lady is kind of like, well, I got betrayed in high school like this, but everybody told me that it wasn't a big deal, so maybe it's not a big deal. But then right at the end, just to kind of, because I think this book must have been personal, and and the woman who wrote it was a nanny at some point for an insufferable white lady. So just to really shiv her, she goes into a flashback, and we find out that the boyfriend actually didn't betray her at all, and she knew about that, but somehow she convinced herself that he did, even though she knew that he didn't, because I think she just wanted to be, she had kind of almost based her identity on being betrayed by him, and so she just left it like that, which is a super weird thing. So then the book winds up and you're like, wow, so instead of everybody being an asshole, it's just the white lady, and the white lady is terrible. She's the fucking worst. So the experience of reading that and then talking shit, it was kind of almost like, and then it's almost like it's a fight, you're watching a fight between the white lady character and the author, and you're like, oh shit, like she could have just left it there and she would have been like one amongst many assholes, but instead she really made her the king asshole of the whole book.
Asshole prime.
At the expense of the book, because it's much worse for like her being unequivocally the biggest asshole It's just the story of one crazy white lady who ruins people's lives.
Right. Do you think you would follow up on Kylie Reed's other literary adventures?
I don't know. It was easy to read. It was kind of funny because there's like, but it was funny, like, so there's the babysitting, like she babysits this 3-year-old kid who says funny things. And that's like most of the humor. Her main character, the babysitter, is a complete zero. She has no personality at all. She doesn't have any ambition. She doesn't have any desire. She's just a cipher for, I'm assuming, the author, which is always tough. So it's like, I think it's her first book. It's like a lot of those problems that you see in first literary books. It's like, there's not enough risk in your main character because you don't want to box them in or whatever. I don't know what the urge is there, but it seems to happen a lot.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe if it, but I mean, this one got a really positive reception and it's not great. So I don't know.
Right. Yeah. We'll see. Tune in the future, listeners, to know if Nico likes more Kylie Reed books. Yeah. Brick, what about you?
My best reading experience of 2020 was between January and February when there wasn't a fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
Or the willful embrace of fascism for most of our country. or any of the other 1,000 things that are just fogging my head.
Right.
That's my real answer.
Yeah. Was there anything you read in that time that stood out to you as significant?
No, but I do have a couple favorite Twitter moments, I guess. So one, which I got tons of mirth from, was the Four Seasons Total Landscaping debacle.
Yes, for sure.
That really did not stop being funny. and continues to
still is
be really funny. A lot of the bumbling thing those fools do come and go quickly, but that one's really evergreen. That whole thing was great, and then you find out it's next to a dildo shop, and then they just double down on their buffoonery and it's just amazing. And then a slightly more serious one, there's a dude on Twitter called Seth Abramson who is a journalism maybe, or he's like a former defense attorney or something. He works at UNH and he fancies himself a meta journalist. And he's been kind of, I don't know if you guys are aware of him or not, if I even talked about him before, he's been kind of painstakingly all over Donald Trump for the last 5 years. He recently said he's all done and he's moving on and not doing that anymore, which is kind of brave because I'm sure that's where most of his, you know,
audiences.
Yeah. But as he's kind of positioning away from Trump and towards what he wants to actually do, he's been talking a lot about just sort of metafiction and meta-journalism, both on his Twitter feed and in articles, as well as he put up a little pre-election like podcast. It was like a limited series podcast, like it was a, you know, like a 6-episode thing or whatever. Kind of about, you know, how the dialectic approach of postmodernism is that we've been stuck in for probably too long has really kind of led to the toxic political and social climate, particularly with the rise of the internet. And how there's different kind of ways to take in and synthesize that information and use it in a more effective way. And unfortunately, you know, the bad actors right now are the only ones that have figured it out. And that's sort of allowed them to have this imbalanced power over people where, you know, like really strengthening this kind of toxic minority. And it's really just really interesting. So look him up, Seth Abramson.
Yeah, excellent. Good. Dave, what about you?
Well, in February, I was kind of happily rereading Under the Volcano, a book that we all group banged, I think, late last year. But then March came and the world came to a screeching halt. So did my reading. So I think something like 6 weeks went by and I couldn't finish The Lowry. I couldn't get into anything else. I was wondering, you know, it felt like nothing I was trying to read made any sense or mattered at all. Then I pulled off the shelf a Library of America collection with Kurt Vonnegut's smirking face on the cover. So I opened that up and started Cat's Cradle, and I was like, ah, yes, something still makes sense. It's like the message, a lot of the message in his writing is like, people are super fucked up, but at least we can laugh at it.
Right.
So I did. I laughed at that and then immediately read Breakfast of Champions after. Brick, I know that's your favorite, the pictures of the assholes, and
that was the book that kind of hooked me on Vonnegut, even though it wasn't the first one I read. It's since been eclipsed by Galapagos as my favorite, but it's still a really good book.
So I blazed through that one too.
The movie, have you seen the movie? Because it's terrible.
No. Is Bruce Willis in
Bruce
that?
Willis
yeah Bruce okay. Willis is in
yeah, it. Yeah, I should probably watch that sometime. So I blazed through that, then I read Then I read Slaughterhouse-Five again, the other novel in that collection. And then there are a couple stories at the end. It was just like, it was perfect for me. And I was like, oh yes, I can read again, thanks to Kurt Vonnegut. It didn't last long. I don't know the next time I finished a book after that, but for that moment, that was like, it fit. It was the perfect thing.
I think at some point we really need to do a Kurt Vonnegut episode.
Yeah, we should. That's a good idea. That makes sense, Dave. That's sort of like that Vonnegut's voice of like cranky. It's not like a soothing voice necessarily. It's not like a comforting voice because he's like critical and somewhat upset about the world. But someone else being upset along with you is comforting at the same time, right? Yeah. So it's like, it's not like you're retreating to escapism. You're confronting all the things you're confronting in the world that you hate, but you're doing it with someone who's like very smart and also hates it as much as you do, if not more.
Yeah, but also very funny.
Yeah, yeah, and a funny sort of like, and finds the humor in it and finds the way to like frame it properly. Yeah,
it was exactly what I needed to get me out of that funk, which I yeah. then went into shortly thereafter. Maybe I should try Vonnegut again. I'd already read all three of those books and the stories. It was like, it was nothing new.
Right.
But it was definitely what I needed at the time.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah, my experiences are similar to all of yours in that I was looking for, I was expecting to be reading a lot more and finding that I was reading a lot less. And I was kind of surprised by that in some ways, but also it didn't seem, I don't know, I felt like I was lacking the tools to get myself into that headspace to want to read for a long time. Usually in a normal year, we discussed this before, I tend to do a glut of reading in the summer between my spring and summer two classes because I just have some more time that I can sort of dedicate just reading. So I read a lot of student work on my job. So I did find myself doing most of my reading during those months still, but even then it was sort of spotty and those experiences weren't always great. I read Naomi Klein's The Shock Doctrine and it was a great book, but it was, I don't know why I chose to read it during the pandemic because it was really sad to read and upsetting, even though it was good information and sort of helped frame my understanding of what was going on and what's going to come or is happening and will come in the future. It wasn't comforting and it wasn't like, it wasn't enjoyable. It was just, if it was more of a homework read, and I don't say that in a pejorative way, but it felt like that experience. I learned from it and I was like, good, I can put this down and move away from it. I was thinking about how last year my best reading experience was when I read Last Night the Lobster in that sort of one evening span. I just like had time to sit in the little reading nook and just like crank it out, and how comforting that was and how it was just like a nice experience. I didn't have anything like that this year. But the closest I got to it was reading Watchmen again for our recent episodes about that book. I hadn't read it in a long time, a couple of years. And I would say in that interim, I started to wonder about Watchmen and wonder about its place in literature and in comics and its influence and some problems with that maybe, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, coming up in our Watchmen 2 episode. So I was going into it. I was like, well, let's see what happens with this. I'm not sure how it's going to feel. It felt great. I really enjoyed the experience. I took it slow. And as I mentioned in the first episode about Watchmen, I read the annotated Watchmen, not the original comics or the graphic or the collection on trade paperback. So even though it was in black and white, which was, I would prefer the color, it would have been nicer to have that, I really liked reading the annotations and getting deeper into the material. It was a good way to heighten the reading experience and also to really focus on the fact that I was just reading, right? That's like the annotations, I think, draw a line to the fact that like you are reading a book right now and you're taking in information and thinking about authorial intent and all that kind of stuff. Even though a lot of the information I knew, or at least was aware of, a lot of it I wasn't, and sort of like, so I got new stuff from it, but just, it made me slow down and read more carefully, because you read a page and then you read a page of annotations, and so you're basically double reading this book. And that was incredibly satisfying. As I mentioned in our 2020 best read episode, I've been thinking about it constantly since then. I've been thinking about the world of Watchmen and just not even the story or the character so much as the setting. I just think about the vision of New York that Moore and Gibbons have there, and especially the colors, the sort of garish kind of purple and yellows and oranges, the sort of weird kind of queasy motley colors that Watchmen is made up of. It impacted me and affected me more this time maybe than any time before. I've always liked it and I've always been compelled by it, and especially as a kid when the first time I read it, obviously it knocks you off your feet, but this time I think I read it as an adult, really for the first time, as an adult reader, or as a more mature reader, maybe. And it all of a sudden things locked into place that I hadn't locked in before, and I was more focused on certain characters, which we'll talk about more, I'm sure, in a future episode, and why I was focused on them. It was great. It was so satisfying to have that experience and to have it be so rewarding and so good still after all these years. It can be dicey sometimes, going back to a book you loved as a kid or felt was important, and then be like, oh, it's actually not that important, or it's, you know, it doesn't hold up anymore. It's lost that magic, and man, it really hasn't. Not an inch of it. It's so good still. So that was one good thing. That was one nice reading experience. When so much of my reading experience this year was about like reading fucking election polls and analysis of polls, like I spent so much of my reading time just buried in the internet trying to figure out what was going to happen for the election and how stressful and traumatic all that was. Maybe traumatic is too strong a word there. Stressful for sure. You know, I wish you'd have all that time back, I suppose, and read something that would give me more. So I'm glad I did have some of those small experiences that were good. Excellent. Readers, what about you? Tell us your best reading experiences of 2020. What did you do with your reading that was valuable? Not just the text itself, but the experience of reading it. What was the one that sort of hit you in the right way? Tell us on Twitter at YakBabies and also email us yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts and ideas. Patreon.com/YakBabies, where you can get our Patreon podcast for $1 a month. Probably excerpts from this podcast you can actually hear there if you want to for that extra dollar. Things that weren't recorded or weren't recently normal feed. There's games, there's bonuses, you brother bros, there's lots of stuff happening on the Patreon feed. It's all worth it for sure. And also our merch. There's some good merch out there. Brick is knocking it out with good designs, so check that out too. It's all available for you for fun, not for free, but for cheap. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all the loyal listeners, and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, and William Howard Taft.